Chapter 28. Waller showered and used a razor to slice a few errant hairs off his head. He was not naturally bald, but had begun shaving his head as an act of disguise when he'd fled Ukraine. He knew that almost nothing changed a man's appearance more than hair added or subtracted. After giving himself another injection of his special elixir, he strode through his penthouse, reaching the end of a corridor and a built-in cabinet. He twisted in a counterclockwise motion the pull knob on the right side cabinet door, and a piece of wood slid aside, revealing a digital pad. He punched in a 4-digit code. There was a click, and the cabinet front moved forward on smooth hydraulics. Waller passed through, and the door, operating on a motion sensor, automatically closed behind him. It was a nifty piece of craftsmanship. Waller's penthouse was over 10,000 square feet, not including the hidden space located here, in the center of his home. This was the primary reason why he allowed no one else in his apartment. He couldn't chance anyone discovering it. The space was a bare concrete shell, part of the original bones of the penthouse. The man who'd constructed this safe room for him was of Ukrainian descent, loyal to Waller, and now dead of natural causes. Waller rarely, if ever, killed his true friends. He decorated the safe room himself. Stainless steel boxes with electronic locks that had been delivered via a secure courier, and Waller had unpacked them alone in this sanctuary. He stood in front of an old metal locker with Fedor Kuchin engraved on a small plate affixed to its door. He took out his officer's parade uniform. It still fit rather well, he thought, though it was tight in places where gravity had bested him. He secured his gun belt around his middle, in which was holstered a vintage Russian 9x18 Makarov PM-53. This had been the Soviet Union's standard military sidearm for 40 years, ending its run in 1991, when the Soviet Empire collapsed completely. He placed the bright blue cap with gold piping on his head, with the red Soviet star in the middle, and turned and looked at himself in the mirror bolted to one wall. The material was scratchy and the fabric did not breathe very well, but to him, it was the finest silk. In his full KGB dress regalia, he was propelled back to a time in his life that even then he had realized would be the high point of his existence. He touched the medals, ribbons, and badges riding on the left side of the jacket. 3 irreproachable KGB service medals, distinguished worker of state security, graduate of Leningrad University badge, and another badge indicating that he had attended the prestigious Andropov Red Banner Institute. He also had medals for combat service, which he'd earned with his blood in Afghanistan, among other places. There were many terrible things his enemies could truthfully call him, but a coward was not one of them. Though born in a rural fishing village only 600 kilometers from Kiev, Waller had always considered himself a Soviet and not a Ukrainian. His mentor in the KGB had been a 3-star colonel general with the reputation of being the butcher of Kiev. This man was also Ukrainian-born, but had sworn his allegiance to Moscow. Everything Waller knew about counterintelligence, crushing insurgencies, and ensuring the security of the Soviet way of life had come from this man. Waller had a picture of him on the wall, next to the red Soviet flag, with its golden hammer crossed with a golden sickle, and the star denoting the Communist Party residing in the upper canton. He marched to the center of the room, came to rigid attention, and saluted this great Soviet, who was now dead, having been unceremoniously shot for his glorious service. Then Waller, feeling slightly foolish at this attention given to a man long in his grave, seated himself at an old 1950s-era metal desk that he had used when with the KGB in his home country. Old papers and forms in triplicate, with cumbersome carbon copies, were stacked neatly on his desk. Scarred metal filing cabinets were lined against one wall. Inside those plain depositories were as many of the records of his decades-long service to his adopted country as he had managed to smuggle out. He would come here from time to time to go over these accomplishments and allow himself to relive past glories. In truth, he cared little for his current life. He was rich, but money had never been a primary goal. He had been born poor, grown up in poverty, and joined the ranks of those defending his way of life. Yet even those in the highest levels of the Communist Party typically only had luxuries, such as a flat with its own bath and a car. It did not pay nearly as well as capitalism. Yet now, that is what I am, he thought, a capitalist, the same thing I fought against all those years. Well, I have to admit, the Americans probably had it right.